was born and raised in Boston, a place you all know well. Brought up by honest parents, the truth to you I'll tell. Brought up by honest parents, and raised most tenderly, till I became a sporting lad at the age of 23. My character was taken, and I was sent to jail. My friends, they came and tried in vain to get me out on bail. The jury found me guilty, the clerk, he wrote it down. The judge, he passed the sentence, I was bound for Charlestown. They placed me on an eastbound train one cold December day. And every station we passed through, you could hear the people say, there goes the Boston burglar, in cold chains he's bound. For one crime or another, he is bound for Charlestown. All you have your freedom, take a warning if you can. And don't go round the streets at night, breaking laws of God and man. For if you do, you'll surely rue and find yourself like me, serving up full 20 years in the penitentiary.
White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana. P.O. Box 401. Where you send your snail mail, your donations, and any other information you'd like to pass along, what's going on in your area. Mm-hmm. And then go up to resist.com, our giant website. That'll take you 100 years to get through it if you read everything. And if you have any problems, my personal email is tm_metzger@yahoo.com. And our webmaster, who can answer other questions too, is merchandiseresist@gmail.com. Well, today is Saturn's Day. I started to do my 2 or 3 mile walk and started sprinkling. We're going to get some rain, I guess, so I'm holding off on the walk. And today we're going to run a repeat show from Sling Blade. Hopefully it's one that you might not have heard, since he did not get me a fresh show in this week. We'll take him to the woodshed on that when we get a good chance. Here we go, Sling Blade.
It's time to go black, comrades, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to go black. Black as an ops. A lot of people think it's not time yet. I think that the longer we wait, the worse things will get. I have advocated a spirit of chaos and disorder. But I've been reading that, you know, that's actually a perfect recipe for a dictator. Out of chaos and disorder, the masses will acquiesce a dictator. So I just don't know. Sometimes I think I have an answer, sometimes I don't. But I'll tell you what. I got this book in the mail called The Devil's Advocate from Taylor Caldwell. The book was written in 1952 by a woman. And it's interesting, the type of writing. I really believe that there's some good writing that came out in the 50s. Wasp was written in the 50s. I've never heard of this book. I've never even heard of this author, and I bet you most Americans out there haven't even heard of her. But basically, it's a guy who infiltrates the system and pushes things that the system that's in power has a certain communist socialist agenda, even in this book. It takes place at a time after the Fifth World War, supposedly. Doesn't really give a date. I just started it last night. Where the Republican Party's been outlawed, the Constitution's been outlawed. You know, I can tell that the author here didn't have any kind things to say about Roosevelt and the rest of the lackeys in the White House. But it's interesting how she describes what is going on. The main character of the story is a guy named Andrew Durant. And he's a guy who was beaten and tortured by the system. And he decides, I guess, to give in and become part of the system, only to help push it along in a more extreme communist and socialist agenda, just so the people can become pissed off. And they've had it. They would rather die than live another day under that system. This guy, Andrew Durant, was a freedom fighter in a American terrorist cell called the Minutemen. Interesting how she used that phrase, Minuteman, back in 1952. Read a good chunk here. Dazed by pain and grief and anger, Andrew tried to remember what his father had told him. He tried to remember what he had been taught by his father and his priest of the long iniquity of Washington. There was 1945 when Russia had been hailed by presidents and generals as our noble ally. That was after the Second World War, was it not? Yes. And immediately after those days of war, Washington had lent millions of dollars to Russia and had lend-leased her fleets of ships and had sent her millions and tons of food. Then there had been some sort of a plan which had sent countless billions of the American people's money to Europe for rehabilitation. The American people had been taxed into misery for this plan, which had been used to a great extent by the recipients to arm Russia. I mean, that's what they do, right? We arm our enemies. We teach all the world's Islamic terrorists. Many of them learn, bomb-making stuff right here at MIT on the East Coast. Alright, there had been some sort of plan which had sent countless millions of money to Europe, okay. Many other noble allies of America had done a fine and roaring business with Russia, especially those with socialist governments. The atomic bomb had been presented to Russia by American spies who had had access to American secrets. All this had been done with full knowledge of its significance, and yes, with full knowledge of its significance. Then when the hour had come, Russia had struck not at her friends, who had armed her with the money of the American people, but at America herself. And in that hour, the noble allies had frantically declared themselves neutral in spite of the United Nations. Well, obviously, she writes this at the height of the Cold War, 1952. Everyone thought we were going to Third World War with Russia. I'm really glad that didn't happen. But long before that time, Andrew's father had told him that the degeneration of the American character had begun. All the violence of wars, all the cynical crimes committed against America had only been the visible flowering of the innate disease which had long before devoured the strength of the American people. The car rolled on in utter silence. I mean, him and another guy named James Christian were beaten and tortured and stuff, and they're in this limousine being taken supposedly to where they're going to be executed. But they're not being executed. But this is all the stuff that he's thinking while he's on that ride. The car rolled on and other sounds, and Andrew tried to remember. He was not only conscious of James Christian beside him in the car, but of the magistrate, the car itself, and the people on the streets outside. Yes, he remembered now. America had given up her freedom, which had made her strong and powerful and great even before the Second World War. She had watched that freedom erode from the early 30s on, and she had done nothing. It had begun so casually, so easily, with so many grandiloquent words. There's a $5 word there. It had begun with the loathsome use of the word security. Written in 1952, just like today. That's the only way that the Patriot Act was passed, right? Ostensibly, so America can be secure. And we went right along the program because we want security. What did Benjamin Franklin say? That people who give up freedom for a little bit of security deserve neither freedom or security? So, that's all I'm going to say on that, at the risk of sounding like a right winger, which I'm not. And in the name of that fantasy, that dream-filled myth, American pride, responsibility, grandeur, and strength had been systematically murdered. What manner of men had lived in those days, far back in the 30s, who had so easily surrendered their sovereignty for a lie and a delusion? Why had they been so anxious to believe that any government could solve problems for them which had been pridefully solved many times over by their fathers? Had their characters become so weak and debased, so craven and so emasculated, that offers of government dole had become more important than their liberty and their humanity? Had they not known that power delegated to the government becomes the club of tyrants? They must have known. They had their own history to remember, and the history of 5,000 years. Yet they were willingly and knowingly, with all this knowledge, declare themselves unfit to manage their own affairs and place their lives, which belonged to God only, in the hands of sinister men who had long plotted to enslave them by wars or directives, by emergencies. In the name of the American people have been made captive. It was not the many wars, then thought Andrew Durant, and the exigencies of those wars which had made America captive. The wars grew out of the weakness of the people themselves, out of their disguise and their disease and their fantasies. They had not been made mad in the very beginning, there would have been no wars. For there would have been no tyrants raised up and supported by their own money and their own work. They would not have lent all their energies, their lives, and their hopes into the creation and then the demolishing of enemies, into the searching for new enemies after the last had been subjugated. Remember the book written by maybe Harry Elmer Barnes, I believe, Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. Remember the slogans that were used at the turn of the last century, the war to end all wars and make the world safe for democracy. Slogans. But we do the bleeding and the rich count their cash. And I'm not talking about some guy who owns a couple department stores. That's not who I'm talking about. When I say the rich, I'm talking about the elite. I'm talking about people who have flights of private jets, who have whole fleets of private jets, who have a couple yachts to sail on, who have a house in the French Riviera, then they got one in Switzerland, then they got one in Myrtle Beach. You know, people who got enormous bank accounts in Switzerland and in the Caribbean and all over the place. People who own banks by the truckloads. That's who I'm talking about. The elite. They would not finally have become slaves of an all-powerful government in Washington, slaves of a monster they had fabricated by their own demented dreams. Even when the Republican Party had been outlawed and declared subversive, the people had refused to see what there was to be seen. Even when the American Communist Party had suddenly joined forces with the party in power in Washington. See, she uses tongue-in-cheek right there. Basically, she's saying the Communist Party merged with the Democratic Party, which everyone knows that the Communist Party couldn't win. I mean, they started to recognize in the 20s and 30s that they just can't win an election in America. There's no way. They couldn't win in the 40s. So they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to infiltrate the Democratic Party. And we're not going to call ourselves communists no more. We're going to call ourselves progressives because it has just a nice sounding, you know, imagery to it. Suddenly joined forces with the party in power in Washington and had supported with the shouts of joy that people would not see. But it was too late then. The disease had shown itself with all its fatal symptoms. The men with brave voices had been silenced, had been imprisoned, had been driven into exile, and had been tortured to death. And as he's riding along in his car, right? I definitely want to read this part here because it's kind of like how I feel now. Remember, this Andrew Durant, who's being chauffeured in a limousine of the magistrate who just got done torturing him and this other guy who weren't going along with the communist agenda in this futuristic America, who belonged to a patriotic underground organization called the Minutemen, who were just, I guess, tearing shit up. So there's James Durant and James Christian riding in the back of this limousine, being chauffeured by the magistrate and a couple armed guards. And they're beaten and bloody, and Andrew himself has a broken arm and busted ribs and whatever. And when as this limousine is being driven through the deserted streets of New York at this time, it gives descriptions of New York being this just cold, sterile, unhuman place. And it says, Andrew looked at the speechless crowds on the sidewalks and hated them. He thought of the Minutemen who had dedicated their lives and their lives of their families to these hundreds of millions of animals who had lost not only their minds, but their spirits. The Minutemen were like a few sane souls in one vast prison of madmen. They believed that sanity could be restored to this continent of murderers, bureaucrats, slaves, soldiers, and robots. They believed that America could again be free. But America was not worth the Minutemen, thought Andrew. She was not worth one life of a single Minuteman. The magistrate in the front seat turned around, his head gracefully asked, did you see something, Durant? I have only to say one word, thought Andrew, sweating and aching, and they'll let me go. That means he had to say one word that he submits, that, you know, he'll fly right and this and that, and his wife and children will be free. This is at the beginning of the book, but obviously I guess he recants and then becomes part of the system and then works from within the system to push it, not against its agenda, but he starts pushing for the agenda of the system, but in such fanatical ways, I guess he gets the an influential position and pushes things along so fanatically, and he's above suspicion because he's going along with the program. But he takes it to such a fanatical edge that he pushes it too radically where it causes the people to just say, I've had it. I would rather die than live another day under this system and cause a revolution. Now, that is very interesting. Here it says, the magistrate was amused and said, yes, weakling, speaking of the American citizens, he said, not fit for the brave new life we had established, where each has according to his needs, and each must work for his country. See, half of that creed right there is part of the communist creed. Each according to his needs. Wait, something about each given to his needs, and from each according to his ability, or something like that. How long do you think it will take until we have armed them so that they can fight us? They're talking about the new enemy. The enemy in the Fifth World War, they think it'll be someone in South America, like Brazil or Argentina. Yes, we have always had a war effort. Tyrants are perpetuated by war. I understand politics and economics, too. That's very succinct there. There was some slight agitation about 10 years ago when we annexed Canada and Mexico. I think that's going to happen in our day, but not by military means, but by a type of what they have over in Europe, the European Union. We'll live to see that, I think. Where the borders will come down, we'll become one economic unit. And we'll use the Amero. Ostensibly, it'll be to make things better. I know Wall Street thinks that the new world currency will be the dollar, and he may be right, but I truly believe that the Obama people, Obama included, really do want to wreck this country in order to rebuild it. I really believe that. And I know that's a crude way of putting it, but something along those lines they want. Because they're big disciples of Saul Alinsky. You know, Rules for Radicals. If any of you guys got that book, you know, if you guys can maybe download it somehow, maybe make Xerox copies of it and send it to Metzger. I totally agree with reading the enemy stuff. Saul Alinsky, a filthy Jew degenerate from the 60s, who Chris Matthews was praising on MSNBC the other night. That was one of his tenets, to create a crisis. Swell the rolls of the welfare dolls and create a crisis. Cloward and Piven, I guess, were also disciples of the Jew Alinsky. So we annexed Canada and Mexico, but that died within a month, supposedly the agitation against that. With our assistance, the American people have never complained about war for the very simple reason that they, like all other peoples, enjoy it, even if it has deprived them of what they used to call their liberties. Give a nation war and she'll be only too happy to surrender the sentimentality of freedom. You know your history, don't you? Two huge guards at the door listened in passive. Okay, that's enough of that. Also talks about the only people that can ride vehicles in society are people that worked for the government because they needed to save on precious gasoline and, you know, tires, petroleum products or whatever. I guess when you're being taken out of the magistrate's offices, it was 10 o'clock and a warm sweetness hung in the damp air, even here in this giant city, for the wind blew in from the sea. But New York at 10 o'clock had become quite silent, for it was against the law for private vehicles to be on the streets after that hour, not only for the ostensible purpose of preserving our natural resources of oil, gasoline, and rubber, but for the real purpose of keeping any subversives from gathering together in secret places. Public vehicles were permitted to run once an hour on a main thoroughfare such as Fifth Avenue, Broadway, and the Avenue of President Roosevelt, once known as Sixth Avenue, and then the Avenue of Americas. And I guess at that futuristic time, it was against the law to say anything negative about Roosevelt. So obviously there was a lot more people in the 1950s who were well aware of what was going on in this country. And look at all the time that has gone by in the last 5 decades. I mean, we had a lot more people who knew what was going on in the 50s and 60s. We had thousands of people in this country. And to think that you're going to pass out flyers and re-educate this new... It's done. It is over with. We had a chance to do that in the 50s and 60s when there were a lot more people who weren't so brainwashed by Jewish ideologies. When Christian churches were still pretty conservative and pro-white. Those days are gone. All those thousands of people whose minds were fertile soil for our type of teaching, those citizens are gone. I mean, most of them are probably dead, and the ones that are still alive are like way up there in years, like 90, 100 years old. I mean, You're not going to spend your time wasting your energy on talking to a 90-year-old person, are you? There was a lot more people who were clued into what was going on back then. You had Joe McCarthy with his communist hearings and stuff like that, but he was railroaded from within his own camp. You guys know a story about that. He said in his book, America's Retreat from Victory, I don't remember how he worded verbatim, but something to the effect of, if all this pro-communist stuff was happening merely by accident, you think they would make a mistake in our favor, meaning the patriotic Americans' favor, but they don't. And you got to look at what's going on in the country today. When was the last thing that was passed by Congress, by the Senate, by the Supreme Court, or anything that was pro-white? Name the last one. There were thousands of people back in the 50s and 60s who we could pack into patriotic gatherings and talk about a lot of things. Those people are gone, those times are gone. Instead of being thousands of people who knew the score back then, now we got millions of people now who don't not only know what the score is, who don't know what the score is, but overwhelming majority of them don't care because they got all kinds of mass media and entertainment to keep them occupied, to keep them thinking from thinking about stuff like that. So I totally concur with the tactic that is being espoused in this book. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I know a little bit about this book before I read it. I haven't finished reading it yet, but basically, this guy joins the system and pushes it along. Now, what could we do with something like that? Well, your local office of the SEIU, Services Employees International Union or something like that? You know, the one headed up by Andy Stern, who's just a devout enemy of the white race. I mean, this guy, he just can't wait. He can't wait for a tyranny to take place in this country. Not only is he the number one visitor to the White House talking to Obama, and Obama's been said many speeches, when it comes to talking about health care, I've talked to Andy Stern. I mean, he said that. They have a video of him saying stuff like that, praising Andy Stern, this filthy degenerate Jew. And this Andy Stern guy, he has said on tape before, you know, we're going to use the politics of persuasion. And if that don't work, we're going to use the persuasion of power. You know, basically, it's not like a threat. And they have him saying in this one thing, we know who voted for what. We know where they live. We know where they are. We know where they work. Sounds pretty threatening to me. The more we act like sheep, the worse it's going to be for us. So you can go around the rest of your life and just not make any waves and don't cause any problems. I'm telling you can do all those things. You can cause problems. You can be a pain in the system's ass and not have them know who you are. We've said it before. Operate far from home and far from work and wear nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing. That's just one rule. We have a lot of tactics that we've talked about on Ghost Wolf Radio in the latter part of 08 and the beginning of 09. Track down those shows and just go over that stuff over and over. Make it part of your mental makeup. And if anybody asks, hey man, it's a good idea. Where'd you get that from? Just say, hey, something I thought up. I want you to plagiarize my ideas. Go ahead, claim them for your own. Everything I have belongs to the struggle. But going out there and trying to educate the masses, trying to build this political base, we do that. I mean, every year it's one step forward, two steps back. Yeah, you get a couple new members to the NSM or some other group, but that's just one more person that's being photographed by the FBI. That's just one more person who's getting a complete dossier compiled against them by Zog. They find out what their telephone number is. They find out where they live, where they work. Then they start looking. Remember, they have access to all kind of computer databases. They can find out what they're buying. Because remember, when you check out a book from the library, when you buy something at the store and use your credit card, all that information goes somewhere. Remember that. I'm going to read some Yahoo Mail here. Somebody wrote to Tom Metzger. I don't want to say his name. Let's talk about science, scientific hand gunnery. Just like there's scientific boxing, so too there is scientific hand gunnery. It has been known for over two decades that higher IQ'd people perform better at combat handgun techniques, and now it is becoming more widely known that higher IQ'd people perform better at MMA, meaning mixed martial arts. U.S. military has been moving against standing rifle stances for decades. Not only is the U.S. military against any of its soldiers shooting its rifles, carbines, such as the M4, which replaced the M16, from a standing stance beyond 100 meters, but it has dropped all use and training with slings along with breath and rhythm control for its snipers. Ironically, while the U.S. military lowered its shooting standards and training, the private sector took the standing handgun stance to an art form. In scientific boxing, the strongest punch that the human body can deliver is not the hook punch, but the half-step cross. Scientific boxers use the half-step cross in a hit-and-run technique called the jab-cross combination. He says 1-2-1 in combinations here. I never heard of that. I've always known it as the jab-cross combination. Not only does this combination, when used to step in and out from your opponent, contain the strongest punch possible, but it greatly reduces your opponent's ability to deliver punches on you. It is a hit-and-run technique of scientific boxing. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Hook punches are actually close-quarter punches that are delivered at 45-degree angles, not as roundhouse type of hooks that are popular to blindside and humiliate. The local high school IQ'd in the American barroom settings. You know, the typical hook punch you see on TV is not what they're talking about here. It's a hook punch, man. I mean, your arm basically makes a 90 degree, and you use it for close in. I mean, with the punches you've seen thrown by Hollywood, I mean, the arm is like way out there. I've seen guys shatter their hands throwing that kind of punch. If you throw a proper hook punch, it won't. And plus, you're putting, when you hit with a perfect, with the type of hook punch I'm talking about, and it's hard for me to describe on video, I ask that you guys, or audio, I ask that you guys research that. Matt Hatmaker, Paladin Press, has a lot of boxing DVDs. The guy is just, I mean, he includes stuff that is pre-Queensberry rules or whatever, when they used to throw headbutts, when they used to throw elbows in boxing, back when they, Marquise, Queensberry, whatever, before those rules or whatever. Research that with a hook punch. I mean, when you throw it, a proper hook punch, you're not only hitting with the shoulder, you're hitting with your back muscles, your glutes, your leg. I mean, the power is generated all the way down from the heel practically. So, the most popular version of scientific hand gunnery is the modern technique of the pistol. The U.S. military teaches its infantry to do most of their rifle shooting from a kneeling posture, and is against shooting their rifles from standing posture beyond 100 meters. Scientific masters of handgunnery can shoot their handguns from a standing posture at standing targets 100 yards away and can hit them with 5 out of 6 rounds. It's been known for decades that the great handgunners make good rifle shooters, but not the other way around. Interesting. The modern technique of the pistol is a scientific method of developing a very strong standing handgun rifle stance. There is a problem in the white racist movement of too many right-wingers bringing their U.S. military dogma concerning small arms over into the handgunnery. Not only does the International Brotherhood of Ghost Wolves need to put in its proper place U.S. military strong small arms training and dogma, but they need to pursue scientific hand garner just like their pursuit of scientific boxing and MMA. That is well said. Let me read you this one part. There is a problem in the white separatist movement of too many right-wingers bringing their U.S. military dogma concerning small arms and the handgunnery. You know what? I've learned some good stuff in the military. I was in the Army in the mid-80s through the 90s. I shot pretty good. Handgun and rifle. So not only does the International Brotherhood of Ghost Wolves need to put its proper place in its proper place military training small arms or U.S. military small arms training and dogma, but they need to pursue scientific handgunnery just like... If you guys can get DVDs from Gabriel Suarez, that Cuban guy, look past his name, look past his ethnicity, but the guy is... he's very sharp. He knows what he's talking about. You guys want a good white guy to research is Kelly McCann, who goes by the pseudonym Jim Grover. His handgun stuff is just off the charts, man. I'd be interested to know this guy's opinion of what Jim Grover teaches, man, because it is just fucking spot on, man. I thought I was pretty good with my handgun techniques and stuff. And when I watched a couple of his videos, I'm like, because I noticed that the U.S. Special Forces and Rangers and SEALs, Marine Recon, their stuff is, like, more advanced than ours. So, I would definitely do that, research that guy. That would behoove you. Well, that's good to hear that someone's, pretty much backing up what I'm saying. I need to research this stuff. So... once again, since I did not originate this thing I read here, I want to make sure it goes down the flaming memory hole. Yeah, there's an audio recording of me having it, but why make things simple for Zog? I want to make things hard for them. I love being a pain in the ass to Zog, because I hate Zog so much. Zog needs to,
murder.
All right. Anyways, I have something here from a guy. Let me get the sheets in order here. But I kind of like some of the where this guy's going with some of this stuff. Intelligence. This is from a Lone Wolf and Lone Wolf Slang Glossary. It's kind of cool. Last train out west, having died or will die soon. Example, he's in bad shape. Looks like he'll take the last train out west soon. Same as bought the farm. So that's kind of slang, last train out west. Meaning if somebody's, we can use that over like some communications or whatever, talk about a fallen comrade. Wow, here I am living in a pretty much inner city. I just saw a falcon. Wow, I've never seen a falcon before in this kind of built-up area. Okay, long blaster. All right, that's a rifle, AR-15, AK-47, exact, etc. LVT, which means low-value target. How about LW or LWO, lone wolf or lone wolf operative or lone wolf operation? I like that. LWO, I like that. OPSEC, securities or operation security. Yeah, that's pretty standard. That's cool, though. How about PI, or PIs? That's person or persons of interest. That's very cool. PSYOP. PSYOP. That's psychological operations. How about recce or recon? Reconnaissance. The first word, recce, I think is pronounced R-E-C-C-E. Okay. Scanner Intel, a radio scanner receiver that monitors law enforcement. Scanner Intel. Scatter Blasters, shotgun. SEC, security. Well, that's pretty standard. SIGINT, S-I-G-I-N-T, signals intelligence. Stoop, S-T-U-P-E. Stupid. Example, you... Are you stoop or what? I don't know about that one. Surveil. S-U-R-V-E-I-L. Surveillance. How about a talkie? That's your cell phone, a two-way handheld radio. UC. Undercover. How about a ville? V-I-L-L-E. A ville could be a town or a city, or a place where certain races reside and live. Example, Niggerville, Beanerville, Gookville, Whiteyville, Ghettoville. Interesting. We posted in Insurgent News and Views update, Lone Wolf, Lone Wolf Cell Slang Glossary. AI, Area of Interest. AO, Area of Operations. Blaster, a generic term describing firearms, also could be used to describe a hired gun. Buy the farm or bought the farm describes someone who is dying or has died. Example, that nigger bought the farm last night. Well, that's pretty standard. I like that last train out west, though. That's kind of cool. Chill or chilled, various terms used to describe killing or death, such as, that beaner was chilled last night. He'll be chilled. He keeps that shit up. Confidential informant, a CI. ComSec. Communication Security, CP, Command Post. Eye skinned, means keep a good lookout. Hand blaster, a handgun. Humint, H-U-M-I-N-T, human intelligence. HVT, a high value targets, and info, means information. Mixville, etc. I didn't give an explanation, but I guess that's an area that's got black, white, Hispanic, everything. Zog, that's a no-brainer there, and that comes from the Great Lakes Lone Wolf. He's a Lone Wolf advisor and consultant, and I like most of those. So I think it's time for a number of our enemies to take that last train out west. Most definitely. I want to read something here from June. I really like this. It's entitled The American Dream. I sometimes wonder in deep amazement just how much we white people can swallow. We tolerate almost any amount of degradation, insults, threats, and assaults on our personal worth and way of life. Just so long as we ourselves are not required to get involved. As long as we don't have to get up and fight or sacrifice anything, then more power to them. Just as long as we can stay in our nice, safe hidey hole of a house or apartment away from the rest of the world, where we can watch the idiot box and munch on our favorite Purina people chow and guzzle our Duff beer, we don't care. We try to pretend it doesn't offend us when the liberals pump penis-lipped apes at us day and night on TV, radio, and papers, the internet, and cry to us about the plight of the poor, hungry, underprivileged, wetback, and the millions of butt-ugly, semi-savage immigrants looking for asylum in our homeland. After all, it doesn't affect us personally that much, does it? We try to ignore the new and horrifying world just outside our doors that greets us now whenever we have to leave our cave and go into town for supplies or personal business. A stolen car runs a red light next to you and smashes into a family of four, killing all of them. It's a drunken wetback who's staggering around the crash scene, dazed and bleeding, with a bottle of Tecate in his dark brown hand. We turn the other way and we see three nigger goons stomping some white boy to jelly on a sidewalk in broad daylight. Half a dozen people see it, but nobody helps. It might cost them a black eye to save their fellow man, but not. Best not to get involved. A fat, sticking hoe stuffs a CD down her blouse in a Walmart, but we say nothing because we don't want to get involved. A troll of wetback female almost knocks you over as she and her brood of seven little brown wetlets go rushing by on their way to shoplift something. Her kids are grabbing candy off the shelves and in their grubby little fingers and stuffing their mouths, leaving the wrappers where they peel them. And the white store manager says nothing because he knows that if he raises hell, she and her family will take revenge and vandalize the store tonight. A helicopter circles overhead as cops try to catch a wetback who knifed an old white lady in her home after he raped her. They're busy 24-7 with an endless stream of mud criminals as they continue to flood across the border and prey on Whitey. Our leaders are far too corrupt and bought off to do anything to stop it, so the system continues to crack under the strain of so much crime and chaos. The streets are now filthy and trash-strewn parodies of a once proud nation. Cop cars cruise the streets hungrily, pulling over every white they can so they can siphon money from them and for their already bankrupt coffers. Bankrupt because the liberal politicians continue to spend all the money on wetbacks and blacks as they breed like cockroaches on steroids. They target the whites because they are the traditional well local governments have always wait. They target the whites because they are the traditional well local governments have always dipped from. You turn a corner to find that there's yet another new camera set up mounted on a signal pole so they can ticket more people for minor infractions. It's good business, especially since the smallest fine is now $110. This makes 4 new cameras this month. The city's getting desperate. This morning you notice that your neighbor's house has been spray painted overnight with gang graffiti, a stark magenta against a light brown house. What is it about garish colors that attracts the lower races so much? It'll cost him $1,000 to repaint his house, and if he doesn't put up a fence or get a barking dog on top of it, they'll just return a few nights later and do it again. And the more of these parasites that arrive, the worse it gets as the entire criminal element of South America pours into the land of opportunity. But it's not just your neighbor's house, it's everywhere you go now. It reminds you of a dog pissing on walls to mark its turf. You drive to the thrift store, looking at knickknacks, but the shelves are stripped of anything worth a damn, and the place is stuffed with stinking, still dripping wetbacks there ahead of you, greedily picking over what's left. One of them begins to follow you around because he knows Whitey knows a good buy. So whatever you take an interest in, he jumps in beside you, grabbing things from right under you and checking them out before you can even lay a finger on an item. Greed abound. He knows that you don't dare say anything, and he grins shyly at you and continues to haunt your shadow until you finally give up and leave the store. You won't be back. There are almost no whites left in this neighborhood. You notice a change taking place a few years ago, but now they're all gone. They've left the state and headed northward, away from the growing mudslide. The politicians glibly tout on TV about what a huge success integration is, and how they're all getting along so well now, totally ignoring the reality that whites moved away from these animals whenever possible. But liberals have never allowed a few pesky facts to get in the way of good propaganda. So they continue to spout their lies, even though the whole world looks upon them with contempt and raw hate. At the food mart, half of the tomatoes are ruined. They're all punctured like by tiny little finger holes made by a half dozen stinky, nasty little wetlets whose pregnant mama has just grinned at her subhuman brood vandalize the produce department. 3 aisles over, a small and extremely simian-looking niglet has taken the lid off a jar of Jif and is licking the peanut butter directly out of the jar. He grins evilly at you as he replaces the lid and sticks it back on the shelf. His bitch hole mama just smirks arrogantly at your look of utter horror and disgust. That's because, just like the wetback, she knows you won't say anything or do anything. They all know one thing for certain. Whites are cowards. They're pushovers. They're afraid to be called racist or bigot and have attention drawn to them. And while they continue to cower and the years roll by, the Jews continue to slowly sneak new laws past the lawmakers, making it illegal for anyone to say, do, or even think anything against these beasts. The noose continues to tighten. And that's from June's journal. This is page 2 of page 3. I didn't get page 3. That'd be interesting to see how he finishes it off. But, well, I'll tell you what. Nobody really puts it like June. And I'd really like to see that guy get a wider readership of the stuff he writes. I really would. Maybe someone out there has, you know, a degree in English. You know, you can co-write it, you know. A lot of writers have co-write it. Or maybe you can be a ghost, what do you call that? A guy who publishes books and stuff. But it'd be great to get June's journal in a paperback form. And we can, you know, all these guys that want to go to these fests or whatever, get a few of these books and sell them for dirt cheap, you know, maybe $10 a copy. Revolutionary Writings of June. White Revolution, the only solution. I don't know what to call it. I mean, you guys. But I think his words would really be good to be read by white racialists everywhere. But he has it down pat, and that's exactly what's going on. We've grown so cowardice and so scared. The blacks and brown, even the yellow and the Southwest Asians, the Hindus and Pakistanis, they all have our number, all of them. That's why Asians are getting very bold in the Pacific Northwest and saying, hey, we could become part of the Pacific Rim. There's Asians saying that out loud in the Pacific Northwest. But you guys refuse to do anything. I don't know what it is about us. What happened to us? Why are we so paralyzed with fear? They don't respect us. You have to understand something about these MUDs. They respect violence. There's not a lot of things in this world they respect, but one thing they respect is violence. In a prison system in Maryland, there's a white gang called DMI, Dead Men Incorporated. Half of it splintered off and wants to be down with the brothers. And the other half of DMI, well, they want to be a white separatist gang. Because white inmates were so outnumbered in the Maryland prison system that they had to band together. And they became the ruthless gang in the Maryland prison system. So much so that the Black Gorilla family hired them out to do hits for them. They became freaking ruthless. Nobody wanted to mess with them. And that's what it's going to take. I hope the people that are listening to the show aren't these 40-year-old virgins who still live at home with mom. And if that's you, I don't mean to insult you, but if that's you, it's time to grow. It's time to grow as a man. You have to. Okay? I don't say this to insult you. I don't want to insult nobody. I don't think I'm better than anybody. I'm just a voice. I'm probably the same voice that you hear inside your head, saying the same things. You all know what's going on. You guys know the score. You know, I watched an interview the other night on 60 Minutes. You know, I wanted to see the story about the special forces working in Afghanistan and how much of a just a freaking clusterfuck that the Afghan army is. I mean, one of the special forces guys got shot by one of his own guys. One of his Green Beret guys got shot in the leg twice by one of these Afghan soldiers he was training. I mean, these people, I mean, they'll never be commandos like white commandos. That's manifested with the British SAS, the Navy SEALs, the German GSG-9, and the French organization and Italian ones. I mean, white Aryan military people, they're none like it in the world. The closest thing when it comes to competence and honor and just professional soldiery would be the samurai of the freaking 1400s in Japan, in feudal Japan. When I saw this episode, I saw this interview with Beyonce, you know. And I don't know why I watched it. I guess I got tuned into the interview when they showed her doing a concert in Dublin, Ireland. And the audience was filled with thousands of white kids just worshiping her. We are in some serious, serious trouble, comrades. And we are, and I don't say this as hyperbole, we are running out of time. And just going along, just listening to these shows and just doing more reading about this. And I mean, well, it never hurts to read military and tactical type stuff. You know, but you don't got to read Arthur Kessler's The 13th Tribe for the 14th time. You know, you meet some white guy in the streets and you're going to tell him that the original racial stock of the Jews in America, the Eisenbergs and Steelbergs or whatever, that their ancestors don't come from the Holy Land but come from the ancient tribe of the Khazars in Eastern Europe, that they have no connection to Holy Land at all. They don't care, and that's not going to win them over. If you guys persist on putting out flyers, let them be based on actual crimes. Rapes and murders. Don't make up shit either. But like Andrew Durant and the Devil's Advocate here, you may want to see about maybe infiltrating SCIU and your local chapter of ACORN, act like a flaming liberal, and do what you can to sabotage it from within. The patriotic teabagger party or whatever they're called, they're working extensively to get the more extreme elements out of their Tea Party thing. And the Tea Party thing is nothing but another dead-end endeavor. And that's why the right wing, that's why Glenn Beck and these guys are worse than Keith Olbermann. Because they get the white people to think that, hey, there's still hope of doing things within the bounds of the law. They blunt any true revolutionary purpose or action or potential. So we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Carpe noctem. Seize the night. Starve the sheep inside you and feed the wolf.
There he goes. Sling Blade. Well, you know, I send him a lot of books and then he sends them back. I'm sort of like a lending library, especially when he's putting them to good work. Interesting that he talked about Taylor Caldwell and the books she's written. She wrote quite a few back there in the 60s, and maybe even the 50s. But I was reading her in the 60s and probably into the early 70s, too. She wrote one about the French Revolution. No, that was Nesta Webster, I'm sorry. But anyhow, Taylor Caldwell, as you can see when they say they destroyed the Republican Party, well, the Republican Party was destroyed a long time ago. It didn't take a dictator to do it. It just took greed, wave the money in front of them. And, of course, that's interesting about the crew being called the Minutemen. Anyhow, it was tended to be a little bit more right-wing conservative, of course, the way I used to be when I thought a lot of that stuff would probably work, back when I was following Robert Belch around, as we called him, and the John Birch Society. John Birch Society will take you part way there, but it won't take you the whole way. So people, about every radical I know in this struggle graduated from the John Birch Society or had dealings with the John Birch Society. So it's quite interesting. Every time I hear somebody talking about their past in the 60s and 70s, most of them talk about they'd been in the John Birch Society. So it was sort of a prep school, but you had to go on from there if you just stopped at what they were teaching. And, of course, they were always goading you to fight communism, communism, communism. Don't get involved with the race struggle. No, that's a communist wants you. You hear that today, too. They throw that up to me. I don't, oh, yeah, you guys. I get it from some so-called right-wing or no people. I don't know what you'd call them. They're into revisionism. They're into the Eastern European thing and everything else. And they just get petrified when I get on their thread and talk about race. They don't want to talk about race. So those people are gone. I mean, they can talk about the Jews all they want to, and they can talk about NATO versus Russia and all that stuff all they want to, but if you don't admit and understand and be out in the open with it, if you can, on the race issue, you're going nowhere. And they get all upset with me. Oh, man, you said nigger. Oh, Jesus. Or you don't think the blacks are equal, huh? Yeah, well, if you think the blacks are equal as a race, you have a serious intelligence problem. So anyhow, that's a little bit on Taylor Caldwell. She was a heavy-duty Catholic, I know that. And so that enters into some of her writings and like that. But she did a great job considering the times. And she led the charge there for quite a while, along with a whole lot of other women that have been in the struggle since way back there when they were putting them in prison for being against going into World War II. And remember, what was her name? Janet Rankin from North Dakota was the only person who voted against going into World War I. The only person in the Congress who voted against going into World War I was a woman. And I'm almost positive her name was Janet Rankin, a true hero of the race. Okay, that's it for today. I'll be back on Moon's Day. In the meantime, take it to heart. Sling Blade's teaching you good stuff there, and we'll be back with another show from Sling Blade. Well, we're going to have a live show with him probably on Tuesday. Yeah, okay, 14:05, and shut up.
Stumble from my good warm bed Monday morning, oh my head. Gotta go and do it all again. Wake up, baby, rise and shine. It's coffee, eggs, and bacon time. Walk your working man out to the car. The boss is in his usual mood. Not one thing does he approve. Sometimes you can't keep him satisfied. Up and down the assembly line, worried faces much like mine, showing the wear and tear in their eyes. They're making it hard on the working man, trying to make a living any way he can. Making ends meet on the installment plan, his money goes right through his hand. Heaven help him if you think you can. They're making it hard. Policeman in his prime sits behind his billboard sign, aims his radar gun right straight at me. A letter from the IRS said, boy, your taxes are a mess. Is this the way the good life's supposed to be? Hard on the working man, trying to make a living any way he can. Making ends meet on the installment plan, his money goes right through his hand. Heaven help him if you think you can. They're making it hard on the working man. Stumble from my good warm bed Monday morning, oh my head. Gotta go and do it all again. Too much room in the Frigidaire. The kids all need new shoes to wear. Payments late on my old truck again.